Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
David Cobb, college basketball and college football writer at CBS Sports. He's on X at David W. Cobb, and he joins now via the phone line. David, how's it going? Oh, you got to finish it. There it is. Gotta love it.
Hey, man. Congratulations to you. Congratulations to the city. That's big time. That is big time. It's not Florida State from a year ago, but it's still Doak Campbell, and it's wow. That was awesome. I know you were hanging on for dear life down the stretch in that fourth quarter. Yeah. But that was you got to be on cloud nine, and rightfully so. That was not just a 2024 Memphis Tigers. That was a decade plus worth of Memphis Tigers program building on full display.
Yeah, and my pregnant wife sitting next to me saying she thought she was going to go into early labor late in that game. But I will say, I mean, what really strikes me about that is sometimes you'll get into those matchups with a group of five, group of six, well, it should be group of six here soon, team against a top 15, top 20 program in the history of the sport. And they'll win, and you'll have some fluky results. There's nothing fluky about it. It was just a domination up front. The D-line and the front seven got after Florida State. They didn't let them do anything on the ground. Was it 24 carries for 37 yards? Mm-hmm. They blitzed DJU. They had no respect for the guy. And then in the end of the game, you get what you get. You held them to their lowest point total of the year. You put up enough points to go win the game. There was nothing fluky about that win. That's what's so impressive about it. I know, again, it's not the same Florida State team. But that Memphis team just thoroughly dominated, played more physical, played better ball.
100%. Florida State is not good, but Memphis was good. And you got to be good to go on the road and beat a team with that caliber of athlete, that caliber of player. There's going to be more guys from that Florida State team who play in the NFL than there will be guys from this Memphis team who play in the NFL. Because they do have really high caliber, well-paid players, and Memphis was better in all facets. The 12 tackles for loss. I mean, are you kidding me? That's insane. And man, they really the drive that stuck out to me was the one coming out of the half, where they ate up about half of the third quarter, going 75 yards, converting on third down. Coming up with big plays to take command of that game, and so that was incredibly impressive because. Say what you will about DJU and that offense, it's all true. But that Florida State defense isn't bad, and Memphis was able to put together big time winning football drives against it.
Yeah, 12 plays, 72 yards on that drive with the score to Anthony Lanphier. And what did you think about Jordan Hankins and his defensive? What he was dialing up on the defensive side of the ball? Just a lack of respect for DJU the entire second half. He saw what it was. He trusted his secondary, which has been hard to do in the past at Memphis. You know that as well as I do. And he brought six or seven man pressures every single play, it felt like, for the rest of the game.
Yeah, and DJ, you never look comfortable. Florida State couldn't pick up those blitzes. And in those moments where you put your defensive backs on an island, they responded. Yep. And there were numerous instances down the stretch in that game where the DBs just made really nice plays on the ball. And for the most part, did it without getting called for pass interference. And that was tremendous. That was phenomenal display. The heady play at the end too, the Hail Mary.
Yep.
Getting close to the goal line, which by the way, if you want to know why DJU was a five-star prospect, it's because he threw off of one leg
rolling out.
And still got the ball to the goal line. My gosh, the dude has a cannon. But the DB, who I can't remember who it was in the moment, but he's
Julian Barnett,
the ball, right? Yeah, that's such a smart play instead of trying to intercept it. And so, what an incredible win and a win that in my mind, Gabe, it does put Memphis in the driver's seat. With all due respect to Barry Odom and UNLV, who everybody in Memphis still respects. you know, Memphis to me is in the driver's seat right now in the group of five.
Yeah, and Toledo had a pretty good win as well. Like, there's some teams that have definitely showed their ability that they could be sneaky and get themselves in. But Memphis is the one of the three horses we talked about at the beginning of the year, Liberty, Boise State, and Memphis. They're the one of the three horses that actually looks the part, that they've looked the part in the early season.
Absolutely. You know, Tulane had another opportunity that they squandered. They got the football back twice on the road against Oklahoma and couldn't get it done. Just twice with a chance to take the lead against Oklahoma in the second half. They couldn't get it done. So they've now lost two of their marquee opportunities. Sure, Toledo and NIU, Northern Illinois, they've come out of nowhere with those big wins. But to me, the MAC always cannibalizes itself. Yep. And I still, sorry to all the MAC fans out there, but I'm going to put the AAC and the Mountain West teams on a tier above the MAC teams until something crazy happens that proves otherwise, because the MAC typically cannibalizes itself. And that Mississippi State team is really bad. And, what NIU did was impressive, but there's still a very real scenario where NIU goes 8-4. I mean, that's what happens in the MAC oftentimes with teams like that. So, yeah, it's you can make the case for UNLV, and it's far from over. And, you know, there's a lot of football left to be played, a lot. But, you know, in this moment, I my opinion is that Memphis is the class of the G5.
Was that the win for Ryan Silverfield where he stamped, like, this is his program? The fans are back on. The fans are ripping and roaring, ready to go. It feels like we're finally to that point. There's a lot of people that still have been lukewarm on them. It's hard to be that way after a win like that, starting 3-0.
Well, and the symbolism of it, you go on the road against your predecessor,
yep,
who left Memphis to
who
go
you've
to
been
Florida
compared
State.
To this entire time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that guy's coming off of a 13-1 and an ACC title. And he's got his back against the wall at home in a must win spot. And you went down there and you beat him straight up. Like you said, no fluky, you know, Memphis didn't go with a bunch of triple reverse passes and, block three punts and, have some crazy penalty, advantage or something. You know, this was a team victory, a program victory. And the symbolism of Memphis and Ryan Silverfield getting that win over Mike Norvell on the road in his house is something that you can't overlook the significance of. That is the victory to this point in Ryan Silverfield's tenure.
And then here comes Navy. Perfect letdown spot, isn't it? On the road, Annapolis, they're coming off a bye week. You're riding high. It's like, oh, my. I hope that is the first thing they talk about in a team meeting. Damn guard down. Please don't let your guard down.
Just show Memphis the Notre Dame NIU tape.
Right.
Because, Notre Dame was feeling itself after winning at A&M, and then they got snuck up on. So, yeah, Memphis is the hunted now, and will be the hunted for the rest of this season. Every team that Memphis plays from here on out is saying, well, here's our chance to make a statement, because Memphis is not ranked this week, but very well could be next week. And, who cares? Whatever. You're ranked, unranked. You're still that team that everybody else is going to be looking at as, hey, here's where we can make some noise. And so you got to flip that mindset, right? Because you were the hunter last week. You were the road underdog, the plucky group of five team. And now, you're kind of in FSU's shoes to a certain extent right now for the rest of the season. So that it does. It requires a shift in your mindset.
Yep. Now, I want to talk to you about the LSU-South Carolina game. LSU on the road, they win 36-33 in comeback fashion. Two takes on South Carolina before we get into sort of the big conversation about that game. One, don't give up a 17-0 or 24-10 lead, right? Don't let it come down to the officials. The other part is, Shane Beamer, I know you like to play Beamer ball and you want to win on special teams. You had 18 seconds left. You ran the ball with Rocket Sanders for a one-yard gain, then took the timeout with 5 seconds left. What are you doing? You had a couple of plays to go run, get a little bit closer. It was only 2nd and 10. You could have made something happen. At that point, I was saying, they deserve to lose at this point. That was just bad coaching, kind of ridiculous to me in that moment.
Well, I was shocked that South Carolina, on its backup quarterback, when its starting quarterback can barely throw the football, and then you put in Robbie Asker, who really can't throw the football, the fact that, South Carolina even reached the periphery of field goal range, I didn't expect that when Robbie Ashford got the football back with no timeouts left. But oh gosh, just a clutch, a classic example of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, because South Carolina was up 17 in that game. Memphis was too, and they found a way to hang on, but South Carolina couldn't do it, and they are so painfully one-dimensional. And now you got to worry about that being even, you know, intensified based on whatever happens with QB1 Lenoris Sellers, you know, from here on out. But that was an absolute must-have, can't-lose kind of game for LSU. And so, I mean, give them credit, man. Like, they actually got it going a little bit in the run, and that was the difference to me, because, you know, they had not been able to run the football going into that game. And as great as that South Carolina defensive front is, and as good as they were in certain moments against LSU, like the Tigers were actually able to pick up the crucial yardage they needed on the ground in some key situations.
Now, there were a couple of calls in that game, and I think the main one that comes to mind is the pick six that was nullified because of blocking Garrett Nussmeier into the ground. They called unsportsmanlike or an illegal blindside, whatever the hell you want to call it. It's still a 15-yard penalty. My opinion on all those, I understand what the lay of the law is. My opinion on all those, he was going to go chase after the pick six. You should be well within your right to block him. Just because you block him hard, I don't necessarily think it should be a penalty. But what do you think about, I think it was a microcosm of officiating all around the country this weekend. It was not a very well officiated weekend in college football, really in the NFL as well, but mostly in college football.
Well, the other one that comes to mind, Florida – Florida defensive back got ejected for targeting. He was, it looked like a form tackle. Hit the guy in his butt almost. And that was targeting? I mean, what are we doing? And then there was another one. Was it in Kentucky, Georgia? I can't remember. It looked like a classic, like the quarterback was releasing the ball. The defensive player had him, you know, there was no
beating
with the helmet or anything like that. Yeah, it was. Yeah. And it was. Yeah, that was rough.
And then there was the Indiana UCLA where he, Indiana player, just a nice easy sack off the edge, gets a guy to the ground, and they call roughing the passer for what reason? I don't know. It wasn't even a targeting.
Man, just, sympathy for UCLA
because they did get run out of the stadium.
They need sympathy, man.
Yeah, but I just. It's a frustrating world for defenders, I think, in all forms of football, especially college football. But like, as much as I just want to blame it directly on the officiating crews out there, I just feel like they have too many points of emphasis now. I just feel like they have too many directions they're being pulled, and all of these calls are just, you know, they're subjective. They're ultimately in the eye of the beholder, and that's where you run into a bunch of issues. It's really not an enviable position to be an official in college football right now.
Yeah, an official or a defensive player, and then we spend all this time at the monitor reviewing, and these plays have a big impact on the game. I mean, I'm saying, 2050, like 2050, before we just put a flag on the quarterback and have that be the one position on the field where it's flag football, because we've gotten so over the top with protecting the quarterback, and I'm all about making football safer. And if you read these CTE studies, you understand why we got to do it. But man, it just makes these games just so painful. And what are you supposed to do when you're a defensive player? The quarterback has the football in his hands. You make a form tackle as he's releasing the ball, and you're hit with a 15-yard penalty, and you know you might get ejected. It's tough. It makes college football tough to watch. It makes college football easy to pick on too, because you get all these NFL purists, right? Who, well, the NFL is just a better product and a better game, right. And you know, like whatever. Like, we don't watch college football because it's some beautiful product. Like, we watch because
it's beautifully ugly. That's the whole point.
Yeah,
That's the whole thing. That's why.
But the officials, man, they only add to the case of those NFL, you know, sort of supremacists who just can't deal with college football. And, you know, I'm all about the beautiful ugliness, but, man, we gotta do better on the officiating side.
Yeah, talking with David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X. We did get some reports over the weekend, and we're going to play it a little bit later, but Bruce Feldman was on Big Noon Kickoff, and he was talking about Memphis going to the Pac-12, and it looks like we do have the sound. I'm going to go ahead and play this sound. Connor, we have it? I think we got it. We'll go ahead and play this sound from Bruce Feldman, and then we'll react to it. You heard it off the top. Tulane and Memphis are the schools that that the Pac-12 are looking at to potentially round themselves out at 8 by 2026 and become a conference. Like, what? It doesn't surprise me in the slightest. We talked about it on Friday, but there's still going to have to be questions answered as far as how much TV revenue, who else is coming with us, what do you view this being long-term? All those questions need to be asked before Memphis decides, you know, if they ultimately get the invitation to go.
Well, see, that's what your takeaway from the Bruce Feldman sound was. My takeaway was what he closed on.
Yeah, ACC. Right.
Yes, yes. And that if there is disruption in the ACC, which there will be, then all bets are off. Well, who is he referring to when he talks about that? Because these other six schools, they've already committed to the Pac-12. I think he's referring to Memphis and Tulane when he says all bets are off. Is he not?
I think he is.
Because those are the schools that would be natural candidates for the ACC to backfill with. And I get way more excited for Memphis and the idea of playing against Virginia Tech and Boston College and Georgia Tech and Miami and maybe North Carolina and Duke. Like, I get more interested and excited about those being the opponents for Memphis, both in football and in basketball, than I do about them playing the leftover schools from the Mountain West and in the Pac-12. So that's where I come down on it, is we still got a couple of years before this theoretical Pac-12 even happens. And before they ever play a game in that league, we could see that disruption in the ACC. And that's just where I kind of put up the caution flag if I'm Memphis.
I agree, but how soon? Like, I know you say before maybe that new Pac-12 plays a game, but how soon do we realistically think a Florida State or a Clemson can escape that conference?
Brother, there's something every day almost, it feels out of the ACC. You know, with a different lawsuit, different movement in that lawsuit. I mean, it's you got to have your law degree to be able to parse through, you know, the potential timeline there on all of that, and when they could theoretically afford to just break out of that grant of rights. But man, Florida State doesn't want to be in that conference anymore. I mean, hey, I don't know where they think they're going to go, where things are going to be any better than they are now. You know, because I don't know that the SEC or Big Ten is flinging the door open for FSU. And even if they got in that league, FSU in its current state would just be roadkill.
Right.
So like, what are they even doing? I don't know. I mean, I don't know why Florida State's doing what they're doing. But they're trying to get out, and they're going to eventually. And when they do, if you go to the Pac-12 and you're Memphis, fine, do it. Like, I see why. You know, you're getting in your 07 Camry and you're ditching your 03 Accord, like, whatever. But just do it in a way to where you're not held in to a grant of rights, and there's some $150 million buyout that's ever going to keep you from going to the ACC. Because I think that door is going to come open eventually. It's just a matter of when.
It's doing it while still understanding you need to think bigger, right? Like, that's the idea you're getting at.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't just say, all right, we're going to the Pac-12. We made it. Right. Now we're in bed with the Pac-12, and you know we're locked in. Don't lock yourself in. I think that's the only thing that I would say is, like, you want to go to the Pac-12, fine, but don't do it in a way to where, you know, you just got that buyout on you that's going to keep you from making another jump, because this is not done and it's never going to be done. I mean, we're, you know, this next decade in college sports is going to be continually filled with realignment, and Memphis continues to make itself attractive. Like,
it's so tricky, isn't it? Because, like, in the past, you get left out because no one's necessarily actually wanting to extend an invite. Now we're talking about two conferences, one on the lesser side in the newly reformed Pac-12, and then the ACC that may actually want you. You're more wanted at this particular moment than you have been in the past. It's like it's a complete flip of what we've seen historically.
Yeah, right. But let's say by some miracle, the ACC stays together. Florida State and Clemson say, you know what? We're going to drop these lawsuits. We're going to stick in the ACC. The ACC does not expand. Yeah, if the Pac-12 is going to add Tulane and add UNLV, Memphis going to that league would make sense. It would. I mean, it just from a competition standpoint, the money there would probably be a little bit better. But you got to have Tulane say yes. Yeah, you got to have UNLV be able to divorce itself from Nevada, which sounds like that's going to be a nasty, you know, state legislature sort of fight there. You got to have other good teams that go with you. So that's That to me is the deciding factor in whether or not it's worth it, is if, you know, some of these other schools that would be decent additions make the jump too. Because if they just add the lower tier Mountain West teams that haven't gotten that invite to this point, and you're in there with San Jose and Wyoming and stuff, I don't know, man. That's kind of lame to me.
Yeah, I hear you. But, you know, it's going to be a tough decision, and you have to weigh all these options. And it's better than it's been in the past, I guess, though. You're more seemingly wanted than you have been in the past, and that's a good thing.
Enjoy this moment, man. I mean, you know, Memphis basketball's got to figure it out. But, hey, you know, they're playing Alabama and North Carolina in these exhibition games. Right. You know, and Memphis football is where it is, and the stadium project's getting done, and Ed Scott's got it, you know, seems to have a really good handle on what needs to be done. Like, I think Memphis is in a really good spot in a lot of ways right now. And so, you know, that's good. I feel good about where it's going.
Yep, I do too. But, David, I appreciate it, man. We'll do it again on Wednesday.
All right, man, sounds good.
Yes, sir. That's David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports, and he's brought to you by Oxbow, the family-owned and operated retail store. It's been making waves in Memphis for over a decade. Off of Poplar on June Road behind the Amoco Station, 964 June Road to be exact. You pass it every single day right before you get on the freeway. Or if you're just driving down Poplar and you continue to head down that way, you pass it every day. Go in. Go in for once. 964 June Road, two-story storefront, beautiful storefront. Earl the Dog's going to be in there. He's an A-list celebrity. Pat him on the head. Tell him Gabe sent you. You can get hunting and outdoor essentials on the top floor, but what I have to point you in the direction, and it's football season. You're going to want your polos. You're going to want your gear, and they have the best teams, your favorite teams, right there, one-stop shop. Tennessee, Alabama, Arkansas, Ole Miss, Memphis, you name it, they have it. They even have Grizzlies gear. And in the best brands, Gentile, Free Fly, Fair Harbor, Duckhead, and Mizzen and Main. Get over there to 964 June Road, Oxbow, right off Poplar on June Road behind the Amoco Station. Take advantage of all of the great clothing they have in your favorite teams. They also have your tailgating gear. If you get to the Grove, you get to Tiger Lane. They have cups, coolers, koozies, tumblers, and the best brands there as well. Arctic, they have Yeti coolers. Go take advantage of their great selection. And you can do it online as well. Go to shopoxbow.com. Again, shopoxbow.com. And when you go there, you can fill up your shopping cart with whatever your heart desires, but just make sure when you go to check out, use my promo code, The Gabe Show. All caps, no spaces, The Gabe Show is my promo code. You can get 20% off your online order at shopoxbow.com if you use it. Whether you're going online or in-store to 964 June Road, remember to shop local, shop Oxbow. Now, we need a transition. We've talked a lot of college football. Now it's time to get to NFL Week 2. We have Monday Night Football coming up tonight. We'll cover all of that next. Back into the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. It's time to take a trip around the National Football League. Connor, hit it. Woo! Cowboys fans, how are you feeling? That's where I was wrong this week. I gave you the Cowboys -6.5 this weekend at home. I was dead wrong. 44-19, Saints get over top of the Cowboys. They are riding high. They have won 47-10 over the Panthers, 44-19 over the Cowboys. Their offense is absolutely rolling. Their defense is creating turnovers. Derek Carr has turned back the clock. He has 443 yards, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception so far this year. Alvin Kamara, speaking of which, turning back the clock as well. 20 carries for 115 yards, 3 TDs rushing, and he added a touchdown catching the ball as well, 2 receptions for 65 yards. This Saints team is the real deal. It seems like Dennis Allen's actually getting what he needs out of this team. They have confidence, and it feels like looking at the NFC South where we thought the Falcons were going to take a step, looks like Kirk Cousins doesn't look the same as he did pre-Achilles injury. It looks like the Saints could potentially run away with this thing. Now, the Bucs look good as well, but this Saints team is the real deal. On the other side, though, the Cowboys, pitiful. Pitiful. Home performance, you got to be better. I don't know what to tell you. Dak, you have to take care of the football. You have to be able to stop the run up front, which has always been their issue since they've gotten all these good defensive pieces, Trayvon Diggs, Tank Lawrence, Micah Parsons. You have to be able to stop the run. They couldn't do that, and the Saints just had their way the entire day yesterday. Oh, gosh, this is brutal. Bryce Young, who just doesn't have a chance right now with the Carolina Panthers, he's been benched, and it looks like Andy Dalton will take over next week versus the Raiders. I just don't get this. I don't get it. I know he's lost some confidence. I know after the game, they're like, you know, do you have any confidence? He's like, I have confidence in the good Lord. It's like, oh, that is not what we want to hear in this particular situation. He's been bad. There's no doubt about it, but he's not getting help from anybody. He has Adam Thielen at 80 years old. He's got Deontay Johnson coming over, who never has been a great catcher of the football, and he was also very angry while he was in with the Steelers. I don't know how much of a good teammate he is at this particular moment. The O-line, who you spent a whole bunch of money on, $153 million between your center and your right guard, they're not any good. There's pressure in his face all day. You bench him. You have to think about this, though. What you did to go get him should keep him on the field at the very least. You're a bad team. You're not going to be good with Andy Dalton. You're not going to win any more games with Andy Dalton. So I don't know why you bench him. You traded DJ Moore, the first overall pick from last year that the Bears got Caleb Williams with, and three other picks in the second and third round. I just don't really get benching him at this particular moment. There's some people out there saying the experiment is over with Bryce Young. He was too short, never had the natural tools, yada, yada, yada. Well, it's hard to really judge that, isn't it? It's impossible to judge that. There is not a redeeming quality about that team. I said last week, I went as far as to say this team could be 0-17 and I wouldn't be surprised. I got proved right this weekend. So we'll see what happens, but Andy Dalton is going to take over for the Panthers. Terribly run franchise, and they will continue to be terrible as long as that guy at the top, David Tepper, owns the team.
Remember the Bobcats?
Yeah.
It feels like watching the Bobcats.
Yep.
They are brutal to watch. And to your point, the clip that everybody was using when it was like, the experiment is over, is Bryce Young running for his life
on a third and five. Listen, with no one open downfield.
The good Lord has better pass blocking ability than the front line of the Panthers.
Yes. I think Bryce Young's a good quarterback. I just don't think he has a chance. And listen, people may be right. The experiment with the Panthers may be over, but a change of scenery may help the kid. Well, let's be honest about it.
It certainly doesn't help that Matt Rhule, Sam Darnold, and Baker Mayfield are doing well now.
Yeah, Sam Darnold looks damn good.
Sam Darnold looks real good.
Here's my other thing, though. We're not going to talk about it, but I do have to get my take out on this. Can we calm down a little bit on Sam Darnold as the next coming?
It's fun,
but you remember 2021 when he was with the Panthers? They started 3-0, and he was a stud, and then he was no good after that. So let's let the tale of time, you know. Let's let this play out.
Let Darnold cook.
Let him cook, but be careful trying to crown him right now with the Minnesota Vikings. Okay, so the Dolphins don't have Tua, and it looks like he's not thinking about retiring right now, and he's going to go talk to some neuro specialists, whatever you want to call it. He's talking to brain specialists. But the Dolphins need to find a quarterback in the meantime. So Skylar Thompson's likely their starter going into next week, and it looks like they've made a signing. And it's not really anybody that's going to make any waves. They brought in Tyler Huntley, former Ravens backup. Won a couple of games for them. He's a runner first and then not much of a thrower out of Utah a few years back. That doesn't fit their system at all.
Gabe, everybody knows the best way to maximize Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle is to have a running quarterback. It's the number one way. That's the way.
I don't.
A lot of jet sweeps.
I don't get it. Are they just going to run veer option every play? What are they going to do here? I don't get this signing. I mean, go find somebody who at least can put the ball in the air. It's just strange to see that. They put him on the practice squad. They're going to elevate him this week because they need some quarterbacks. But that is just a very weird response to Tua getting hurt.
Go get Joe Flacco.
Get Flacco. Get Jameis Winston. Find somebody who can air the ball out a little bit. You have some great wide receivers. Tyler Huntley and Skylar Thompson are not maximizing what those guys can do. I can tell you that right now. Bad for the Jets. So Hassan Reddick has yet to play this year because he's still holding out. And he does not like the Jets. He was unhappy with his contract situation with the Eagles. They traded for him, and he's still unhappy with his contract situation. He's not playing. So you wonder about their DN depth, their edge depth. Well, it got worse. Jermaine Johnson came out of Florida State 2 years ago, has torn his Achilles, and he's going to be out for the year. He's ruptured his Achilles. Really tough. He's a young player, and I really like him. He's a damn good player. One of the best young edge rushers in the league, but they're going to be as decimated at the edge positions as you could possibly imagine, and they weren't good against the 49ers in week one. You see a team with a good O-line and a good run game, that's really going to matter. And Jermaine Johnson is good on pass downs and run downs. You're going to have to find somebody to replace him. Kansas City Chiefs, Isaiah Pacheco is out a minimum of 8 weeks with a broken fibula. That is a massive blow. Don't hide it, because Clyde Edwards-Helaire is sidelined for at least a couple of more weeks. They don't really have anybody they can lean on in the meantime. So they have a good O-line. They need to get that run game going. Patrick Mahomes didn't look great against the Bengals by any stretch of the imagination. Two nasty, nasty picks. Some of the nastiest picks I've seen him throw in his career. You saw both of those?
Well, one was called back.
Yeah, but you saw both of the ones he threw. Yeah. It's just like,
And they still won the stupid football
they
game.
They did win the football game.
The black but, magic no, of
but
the
also, Chiefs. But also, can we do the Insane. Bengals? Can we do the Bengals thing here? After losing to the freaking Patriots, what did I say? I said I wouldn't be surprised if they stick in this game. Of course they stuck in the game. They didn't win it, but of course they were around.
Burrow looked good.
He looked fine.
Better.
He looked fine.
He could pick up a water bottle.
Yeah, he did. And he had one solid deep ball as well. But the Chiefs are going to have to find a running back that they can rely on. I believe that they're bringing in Kareem Hunt, their former running back, for a visit tomorrow. I think that would be a very solid signing for them and definitely carry them throughout the year.
I will say, though, the Bengals, a lot of checkdowns to a tight end. Yeah. Happened a whole bunch.
Yep. Yeah, I only brought this up because I'm tired of the Kyler Murray disrespect. I'm tired of it. It's disgusting, and it's gone too far. And this guy is a absolute stud. Week one against the Bills, 21 for 31, 162 yards of TD, has not turned the ball over, did not throw a pick. This week, in a 41-10 win over the LA Rams, who everyone wants to crown in the NFC West, 17 for 21, 266, 3 TDs, 5 carries, 59 yards, and... This is a guy who everybody wants to talk about. Well, he gets distracted when video games come out. He's not a good leader. All this. He is an unbelievably talented player. It's still funny to watch him run, though. He's just got that little man run. But he is a very, very explosive player in the National Football League. He's a franchise quarterback. And I think he will continue to do well throughout the rest of the season. And that Cardinals team is a lot more scrappy and a lot better than we gave them credit for coming into the season. There's no doubt about it. They played really close with the Bills, and they just beat the hell out of the Rams.
It turns out all of the hot takes about Marvin Harrison after one game weren't true.
I'm going to tell my truth, though, really quick. He had 4 catches, 130 yards, 2 TDs. All in the first quarter. like everything he did was in the first quarter. After all that nonsense last week, the Cardinals go, all right, we're just going to go early and often to Marv and see what happens. And it worked out.
Here's what I'll say. He gets open a lot. He's open a whole bunch.
He is. And there were 4 incompletions in the game because they were trying to force the ball to Marv throughout the game. Once he killed the Rams early, the Rams tried to give him cloud coverage, double team him, and they kept trying to force it to him. There was 4 incompletions in the game. All of them were to Marvin Harrison.
Do you know who one of the most underrated players in the NFL is?
Who?
James Conner.
James Conner. We talked about this.
Dude just gets fed.
We talked about going into the year, Conner. I was like, I think he's done. Like, I don't know if he really has it anymore.
Just a workhorse, man.
That game proved me wrong. 21 carries, 122 yards, and a tug. That sounds like a guy who still has a lot of good football ahead of him. And I love his story, man. I love his story, man. He had cancer in college at Pitt and was able to beat that, and you know, got a big contract after the Pittsburgh days with the you know, Cardinals. Like he has gone through a lot, and he continues to be a damn good player. He fights through a whole bunch. Impressive, though. Impressive performance from the Cardinals. Something we're going to have to pay attention to as the season goes along. But that will do it for a trip around the National Football League. We'll come back, wrap up hour number 2 next with Small Talk right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, if you didn't see, the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Broncos on the road in the Russell Wilson return game. They gave him a petty ball or petty game ball after the game. It's 13-6. Justin Fields is not 2-0 as the starter. But on the other side, Bo Nix, who I was ready to write the Hall of Fame acceptance speech for in the preseason, he didn't have a good game. He had 2 picks, no touchdowns yet again. So he is now 0 in his touchdown column, 4 in the interception column in his first 2 games in a Broncos uniform. But in the middle of the third quarter, they had a really good drive going. There was 2 big plays downfield made by Bo Nix's arm, and then they get into the red zone. They had a 2nd and goal, and he threw a pick in the end zone. We have to go out to Bo Nix and ask him, Bo, what did you see? He's had it.
Hashtag analysis.
Two starts.
He's brilliant.
Two starts in the NFL, and he's done with the media. You've broken him already. Damn. But hey, listen. I know that Jeffrey did it for Tell Your Story today. I think that's telling the story and telling your story, right? Drop back. Saw a guy open that he thought was open. Threw it to the other team. It's pretty. A fine explanation for me.
Did he lie?
He did not lie. It was perfect. I thought it was dead on. Some of these questions, and I think that's a fair question. I'm not going after the reporter, but some of these questions kind of, it's like you're making him relive this moment at this time, but it's kind of pretty selfish. He dropped back, he made a bad read, and he threw a pick. What did you see? I thought I saw something that wasn't there.
I know it's also kind of normal, but him still wearing his pads during the answer too makes me laugh a little bit.
Yeah, I think he'll get better as the season goes along. It's been rough for all rookie quarterbacks, though. Caleb Williams got the worst of it last night.
Get rid of the football. Give up on plays. Get rid of the ball. Will Levis, dummy.
Will,
good God.
Well, he's second year.
Holy crap.
Did you see the sideline?
That's what mayonnaise does to you.
Seeing Brian Callahan on the sideline, what the F are you doing?
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Gabe, they have the number one defense.
What's your problem?
They have the number one defense, and they're 0-2.
They have an unbelievable defense.
They're
unreal. They have some young guys that are making plays.
So good.
And then I think the Giants pulled the impossible this weekend. They scored three offensive touchdowns and didn't allow a single touchdown on the defensive side and lost a football game. Did you see that? There was eight real drive, or yeah, so no, seven real drives that the Commanders had, and they got a field goal at the end of every single last one, 121-18, because of a missed PAT leading to more 2-point conversions that were missed.
The football's been real dumb this year, but I'm happy it's back.
You know, and it always cracks me up. You have a lot of NFL, like, people that just, like, hate college football. Oh, all the dumb football play. There's some dumb football played in the NFL, too. Do not sell the NFL short. They play dumb football as well. Let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, we'll start up hour number three, and we're going to open it up talking some college football with the Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. That's Harold Grader. He's next.